Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. We are very near to the Christmas holiday type winter festival season, which I know for some of us Griefsters can be very difficult. So, wherever you are listening, I hope you're having okay a time as possible. I hope you have people around you who are being kind to you, and I hope you're being kind to yourself as well. I know this time of year is really difficult. I've said it before, my only advice is light candles. That seems to help me. If I have some candles going, I think it's going to be okay. It will be spring. It will happen. Just to say, before Christmas, perhaps you're thinking of buying someone a Christmas present in the Grief Club community. Perhaps they'd like to buy You're Not Alone, a new book by Cariad Lloyd, which is out January the 19th, 2023. You can pre-order it. Then you could probably, I don't know, you could print out your pre-order and wrap that up. If you also go to a special website, which I can link on the socials, you can get an amazing pin badge designed by logo designer of Griefcast, Jade Perkin, which says You Are Not Alone on it. So you could give them the book and say in a while there'll be a pin badge with this present as well. Look, a lot of this will be coming in January, but good. It's nice to have something after Christmas to look forward to. If you are enjoying the series, or if you've ever enjoyed the series or an episode, ever found it helpful, please do pre-order. It makes a huge difference to me and the book's success, and I would be extremely, very, very grateful. Thank you for all your support so far. We also have a book launch January the 17th at Earth in Hackney, where I'll be interviewed by the amazing Fee Glover. Tickets are available from Fane Productions. This week, I am talking to such a legend, such a brilliantly, brilliantly funny, funny person. It is the wonderful, incredible stand-up, Ramesh Ranganathan. If you don't know Ramesh, where have you been? He's done a bazillion things. He's been on Live at the Apollo. He's got a Netflix special. He's been in films. He was in Cinderella. He had his own documentary, incredible documentary with his mum. You know, he does a lot of stuff with Rob Beckett on Sky. Like, he has the Ranga Nation. Like, he's on a lot of television. And the reason is, he's an incredibly funny person. Ramesh and I have been trying to set up this interview for about 3 years. That's how busy he is. And finally, we managed to get a date in. And I was so glad, because this show originally started off with me talking to comedians, and it's evolved into something else, which I absolutely love and I'm really proud of. But there's a special place in my heart for two people who have a lot of grief and pain in their life, cracking jokes about it and avoiding the pain. And I really love talking to comedians about death, because it's never depressing. It's always enjoyable. So I know you are going to love this episode. It's a really, really special episode. Ramesh is, you know, as well as being funny, he's honest and heartfelt and speaks so beautifully about his relationship and his experience with his dad, Ranga. who passed away several years now. So please sit back, enjoy, and here's Romesh. So, Romesh, who are we remembering today?
Well, the most obvious person to remember today is my dad, who passed away about 11 years ago.
Okay.
Just actually about this time of year. So it was December 2011 that he passed away.
So, and what was his name?
Well, it's a bit, Sri Lanka names are a bit weird. So his name was Ranga. Well, that's how everybody knew him.
Right. But
it's like, it's. I don't know, I don't even think I understand it myself. Basically, my dad's surname isn't the same as his brother's surname. Like, surnames work differently in Sri Lankan culture.
Okay, so, yes.
So his name was actually Vetivelu. But that's also the family name. So everybody had Vetivelu in the name. So I don't really... Basically, when my dad had a lot of brothers and a sister, and they all moved to different parts of the world.
Okay.
And my dad chose to make Vetivelu his first name and Ranganathan his second name. But that was completely different to what all the other brothers and the sister decided to do. So I did that DNA show recently
with
Rob Beckett. And it made it impossible for them to find any kind of family. I mean, they had to really dig deep to find out what my family tree was, because their names don't help, it turns out, in my family.
Oh my God.
Everybody knew him as Ranga.
So everyone else went for Vetivelu as a surname?
Yeah, well, yeah, basically, yeah.
And he was like, no, I like it.
I want to make this as confusing as possible. I'm going to move to a different country to everybody else. And I'm going to take a different... I don't know if he's trying to distance himself. I don't know what was going on. But anyway, it was it's a weird one.
Yeah. So, but most people called him Ranga here.
Yeah.
Because of the Ranganathan thing. Is that kind of typical English?
Yeah. And that was just kind of... That was kind of his prefix. So, like, so his brother... He had a brother called Gurunathan or Gurunathan. And then there's Padmanathan. And there's Sevendinathan. So, like, all of his brothers have got different, like, kind of... little prefixes. So his prefix was Ranga. I'm pretty sure prefix is an almost offensive way to describe it. But anyway, that's what I've chosen to do. So that's everybody knew as Ranga. Yeah.
Right, Ranga. Okay. And so 2011, 11 years ago. That's quite. We talk a lot on the show. Well, my experience on the show is like the 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. Like we're quite. That's when you sort of have this kind of. Almost assessment of it, of like, oh, so how are you feeling at this present 11 years? Are you coming up to the 11 year anniversary then?
Yeah, so it'll be the 11th anniversary in like 2-3 weeks.
Okay.
I think. So, and to be honest with you, I struggle a little bit because I was really close with my dad. So I've got a younger brother and my mum's still alive. And so there's the three of us left now. But I would say that my brother and my mum are very, very similar.
Right.
And I'm very similar to how my dad was. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I was really close to him. But it was a really troubled relationship because my dad wasn't very good to my mum. And so that led to me having loads of arguments with him and stuff like that. So, but when he passed away, we were very close. But the truth is, where I'm at right now is feeling bad that I've kind of forgotten what his voice sounded like. We haven't really got any recordings of his voice. We haven't really. And sometimes I am upset by how long it's been since I last really engaged with having lost my dad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of, you kind of get on with life and I know that's what you're supposed to do. And at the time it happens, that feels impossible. And also you get kind of resentful for people that carry on after a very quick time, you know, because you sort of think, well, dad's gone, he's still gone, but everybody seems to crack on as they have to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now I sometimes catch myself feeling bad about, like, I feel like I should think about him more, really. Do you know what I mean? You kind of get busy with life, and we've got three kids and two dogs.
Oh, God.
And so you kind of get like, you kind of just get on with life. And whenever I go and visit my mum, we talk about stuff that... My dad was quite a character, so we talk about stuff that he used to get up to. But, yeah, I think the biggest thing is I've forgotten what he sounds like. I mean, I've got a kind of a vague memory, but his voice used to be crystal clear in my head, and it's not anymore. That's really hard, to be honest with you. Do you know what I mean?
I completely understand. So it's 20-plus years for me with my dad. equally right. bit of a complicated relationship. Not like, because often I think people think, because I do this show, they're like, oh, you must have just been daddy's gal. And you're like, no, I do the show because it was quite complicated and fucked up.
Yeah.
So if it was fine, I wouldn't need to keep talking about it. And I forgot his voice. I had exactly the same thing. It just went. And because he died in 1998, we had like, you know, like a dictaphone somewhere with his voice on, and like a VHS, like nothing accessible, nothing easy. And then in the pandemic, a very strange thing happened to me, which I wrote about in my book, that I suddenly one day heard it. But that's like, I'm not joking, it'd been 10 years. Like I was it like having a kind of, you know, you're half dozing and the kids were like, yeah, in the background screaming, and I had like 5 minutes of like, I'm just gonna lie here. And I thought, what's that? And I was like, oh, that's his voice. But it was like I had to wait for like 20 years. Because for ages, it was complete blank. I was like, I can't remember it at all. And it's a really, it's difficult, isn't it? Because it seems like, in one hand, it's like, oh, well, it's just a voice. But on the other hand, you're like, no, I used to know that. Like, it used to just live there, and now it isn't living there.
Yeah, yeah, it was really difficult, because that obviously, like, that you can't, you take it for granted that you're going to hear that voice forever.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Especially
as like you don't think that your parents are going to pass away, like, as you're growing. Like, I know that obviously it's inevitable, but you don't think about that. What a depressing existence that would be, just constantly thinking they're going to die at some point. But yeah, you just take it for granted that you're going to hear that voice forever. And I did hear it for a long time. After, you know, I knew what it was like.
Yeah,
I knew
yeah.
what it was like. I knew what his movements are like. You know, everybody's got a very specific physicality to them, and
yeah.
I remembered all of that so vividly, and sort of how he dressed and how he would walk and all that kind of stuff. And all of that stuff kind of fades, because, you know, we don't have a lot of videos of him, we don't have a lot of recordings of him, and so we've got lots of photos. So, and like my mum's like still got photos of him all over the house, but in terms of him in motion, you know, him being him living, I've got very little record of that. And then you just have to kind of accept the fact that that is sort of degrading in your mind's eye. Do you know what I mean? And that is quite a difficult. It's quite a difficult thing to deal with. And also the other thing that is, you know, we've got three boys, and our youngest, you know, was born after my dad passed away. And my dad passed away after our second son was born in September. My dad passed away in the December of that year. Yeah. And so they just don't, and my eldest son knew him for a bit, you know. I remember like my dad, when he first met our son, he was like so taken with being a granddad. Like he was so, I saw like a side of him. I must have seen it when I was a kid, but I don't remember seeing him being so, he was just so obsessed with my son. Do you know what I mean? He was so all over him. And like, there's lots of things that I did. I mean, you know, we can get into it, but like, there's lots of things that I did at the time that I slightly regret. Like, for example, I remember bollocking my dad because he was quite a heavy smoker. And then he would go out and have a cigarette, and then he would come in and basically huff all over our kid. And then I remember telling him off. And just going, Dad.
Of course, of course.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but the look on his face was so heartbroken, because he's just like, to him, first of all, he didn't have an appreciation for what the health ramifications of that were. And so to him, it's just his son going, can you not cuddle and kiss your grandson? Do you know what I mean? And like, but the point I was trying to make was that it is upsetting how little my grandkids have got. My eldest son's got some sort of vague recollection, but you know, to give you an example, my mum's got a photo of my dad, just like a headshot, in the living room. And my second son, we went round to visit, and I said to my son, do you know who that is? And he thought it was Nelson Mandela. So
oh god, what did you say? Yeah, it is.
Well,
we're related to Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, yeah. Grandma likes to have a massive headshot of Nelson Mandela in her front room.
She's a big believer in what he did,
the healing
process he gave to South Africa.
Yeah.
Why not? Why would it?
Yeah, I mean, grandma's really passionate about it. I know she's completely apolitical in every other way, but for some reason, She's really passionate about Nelson Mandela. So that's, you're right. Well done. Good guess.
Oh, God. I mean, the same. Obviously, because my dad died when I was so much younger, that my kids have no idea at all. And I grew up very much expecting that of like, oh, they won't have a grandpa. But still, when I did have children, it still fucking hurt that you're like, oh, they just... Ugh. And I had a really great grandpa. Like, my dad's dad was very involved in our life, was such a big character that it's sometimes hard to be like, oh, they're not going to get that, are they? And how do you keep them alive to that person? It is really hard when, like, yeah, they weren't even born, although it's just a photo on the wall. Do you talk about him in that way?
Kids are really funny, aren't they? Like, they'll just go, your dad's dead. Yeah. You know, like, they're just really sort of very matter-of-fact about it, aren't they? Do you know what I mean?
The worst we had, my husband lost both his parents, and he was looking after the kids in the playground. And, you know, like, some kids find it very unusual that a dad's there sometimes. So this boy was, like, following him around, being like, why are you here? And he was like, well, I'm here with, this is my daughter, this is my son. And he was like, yeah, but, like... well, where's your mum and dad? And Ben was just like, oh, well, they're dead, because he just didn't know what to say. And then the kid ran off around the playground and went, his mum's dead!
Oh my God.
The whole playground. And he was just like,
There's a lot wrong with that interaction. I mean, sort of, you know, I'd say both sides had have things to answer in that case.
You were saying.
No, but it's just difficult because my kids have not really got any perception of what my dad was. And also, you sort of think, you know, me talking to them about my dad is like a fucking history lesson.
Yeah.
You know, they don't give a shit. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I remember, like, my grandparents all stayed in Sri Lanka.
Right.
So I didn't really have a connection with them at all. You know, they were just some people that didn't speak English. I mean, my mum's parents passed away a long time ago, but I did meet my mum's mum and I met my dad's mum, and they were just two people that didn't speak English that I would go and have to pay reverence to every time I go and visit them. Do you know what I mean? But I had no connection, and even to the point where I remember my dad getting the phone call to tell him that his mum had passed away, and You can't connect with that. You know, you're watching your dad be really upset, but you don't feel it. You don't know that person. Do you know what I mean? I'm sort of conscious of that when I talk to my kids. I just sort of think, am I forcing them to hear about an old man that they don't give a shit about? Do you know what I mean? I sort of think, you know, how important is this? I mean, they're very empathetic, obviously, but at the same time, you know, they've got Fortnite to play. Do you know what I mean? Do they want to?
It's hard. It's hard to get the balance, because I try and talk about him a little bit, but then sometimes you can see they just, like you said, it's such a strange concept to them that you're talking about someone who just, like, they've never met, or they've seen in a photo, which even that is weird, because it's not like they haven't seen a video, they haven't seen it on a phone, you've shown them a piece of paper and gone, that person is. That's your granddad. And they're like, all right. Yeah. Like, it is like saying Nelson Mandela used to be a very important person. They're like, all right.
Yeah. I don't know
what you're talking about. So it's hard, isn't it? Because I always want my kids to know, like, I will talk about it. So, like, it's not like, don't mention it, mummy will cry. It's like, sure, I'll talk about it. But yeah, it's equally, you don't want to sit down and be like, well, obviously, I'm quite bad at this because I do a show about death, but it'd be like, people die. Granddad died. Yeah. This is what happened. Everybody will die. But yeah, it's a hard balance.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they do hear a lot, because, you know, when we go and see my mum,
she'll
talk about, but the problem is that my mum talks about my dad almost exclusively negatively. Do you know what I mean? So, like, she sort of masks it from the kids, but every now and again. So, like, basically, my dad slept around a lot. Like, he was a prolific shagger, how I would describe him. And he was like, he was quite a party animal, and he ended up going to prison for a bit. And, you know, there was a period in his life where he wanted to leave and go and be with another woman and start a new life with her. And then he went to prison. And then when he came out of prison, he had a change of heart and he wanted to be with us. And he spent the rest of his life trying to make amends to my mum.
Wow.
But my even though my dad's been dead for 11 years, my mum, I don't think my mum has fully achieved closure on how all that went down. So, and I remember when she got back together with my dad, she would occasionally phone me up and start complaining about how he used to behave, as if it had just happened. And I remember saying to her, if you're not okay with how he behaved, you need to split up with dad, because at the moment you're walking down the middle here, which is where you're still with him, but you still haven't gotten over what happened. So you either need to sort this out and put it... I didn't say it as bluntly as this.
Yeah.
So you need to decide to either need to put this to bed or you need to not be with him. So, you know, she talks about it a lot, what he was... But the truth is, now when she talks about it, it's quite a distance. Like, she makes jokes about it. Do you know what I mean? And she's like, she's... But they do hear about him and they know he was quite a character and they know that he used to run a pub and all of that. So they know all of that stuff. But if the truth is, I'm only ever really led by if they ask me. Do you know what I mean? I won't sit them down and go, it's time for our weekly hour of finding out about granddad. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of...
And he sounds like such a character to me. That sounds like the kind of thing they're going to get to teenagers and go... Hang on, what did you just say? Like, he ran a pub and he did it. What granddad did what? Like, you almost need to be a little bit older before you think, fucking hell, my granddad was a bit cool. in terms of teenage view of like, oh, I didn't just have this sleepy granddad. It's like, oh no, there's stories. There's a lot of stories about your granddad. Like,
yeah, he was a proper, like, when you know, like, the stories about him are a lot better to hear about than they were at, you know, to live through. Do you know what I mean? Because, like, we basically went through he basically left his job and he was getting drunk a lot and sort of sleeping around. And so the places that he was working at, he was on a trajectory to do quite well. And, you know, we started off quite comfortable, to be honest with you. And then he kept on sort of pissing people off at work with his behaviour and stuff like that. And then he decided to leave to become some sort of, well, we thought entrepreneur. It turns out he was involved in quite serious fraud. But everything kind of went wrong. Not went wrong, but we got thrown into turmoil pretty quickly.
Through his choices.
Yeah, and I remember, like, you know, I've got memories of recollections of hiding under the tables in our house because people that he owed money to were coming around and banging on the door and stuff like that. And then I remember one morning, my mum had found out that my dad was seeing this woman in particular quite regularly. And she said to me, I'm going to take you to this woman's house because I haven't seen dad for 3 days. Can you knock on the door and ask where your dad is? Now, I don't know if you run another podcast about parental decisions, but I would say that's quite a heavy thing to put on a kid. But my mum was in distress. She was in a bad way. So anyway, she drove me around to this woman's house and I knocked on the door. And I said, excuse me, woman, where's my dad? And she said, oh, he was arrested 2 days ago. And, like, so basically they'd done, like, some sort of, the police had done some sort of sting. So he turned up to complete some deal. I don't know the exact details of it. And then the police sort of raided it and he got arrested. And he ended up spending, like, he was sentenced to 2 years.
Oh my God.
But he ended up spending, I think, a year and a half in prison or something like that. But, like, he wasn't, like, all of that, it was just him, man. He was like drama. Do you know what I mean? Like, he worked in finance for this book company, and then he took over the book company. It was in North London. He didn't want to commute to North London anymore, so he moved the whole thing to about 20 minutes from Crawley. And then he would go to work and he'd go to this pub at lunch, and he realized that he was having more fun at the pub than he was at work, so he sold the business and bought the pub.
That's
basically what happened. And so he was a proper character. Like, he was kind of a really interesting, fun guy, and it was a proper personality driven pub. Like, my dad was like life and soul.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, he was a really great character, but it was difficult to be it was definitely difficult to be his wife. But, like, he and I had a lot of clashes. Do you know what I mean?
Like, when you have someone who's such a character, it's that thing of, like, they're a tornado. And sure, seeing a tornado on the horizon is incredible. Like, wow, look at that tornado. Look at us watching this tornado. When you live with a tornado, because my dad was a tornado, it's like, sometimes exciting, but also as a child, it's like, it's really quite scary quite a lot of the time. Like, it's going too fast. What's happening? Why? And like, if my mum would ever, very, very rarely ever say, your dad has to look after you, like, I have to be somewhere else, me and my brother would be like, oh God, like, oh, okay. Oh, what's going to happen? And because you just knew that person wasn't, like you said, a character is not like, this guy is going to make sure you go to bed on time and don't eat sugar. Like, that's not their vibe. Yeah. And yeah, I know what you mean. Like, the stories become stories and become really funny, amazing things. But when you're living with a tornado, it's, yeah, it's dangerous and you can get hurt. It's
like, yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah. What did you ever, before he died, did you ever like, so you said you became closer. What happened? Did you kind of have that moment, father-son moment, where you're like, right, let's sort this out?
Well, no, I don't think we consciously sorted it out. I remember when I was when I was at uni, I came back and my dad had just come out of prison and he was back with my mum, but, you know, it wasn't all sorted. They were still arguing and stuff like that. And obviously they had stuff to work through because there were lots and lots of things that my dad had done that, you know, and also up until a year previously, he'd been wanting to leave, right? So there's a lot for them to work out. And I remember once, I kind of went, my brother and I went off the rails a little bit when, it must have been incredibly difficult for my mum, but we were just out of control, really, for a while. And I'd come back from uni for the weekend, and then I said I was going out with my mates, and I just didn't make it clear when I was coming back or whatever. And so, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. But I remember my dad coming back. Sorry, I remember coming back and my dad giving me a bollocking, just going, you need to be a bit more considerate. And I just lost.
Of course,
my
right?
Shit.
You've been waiting for, like, dude, don't you tell me. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And I just launched into this monologue about all of the things that meant he had no right to tell me what I do. And, you know, you haven't been a parent all this time and now you come in and you think you could just come in. And, you know, I was really, I'll be honest with you. First of all, one of the things that I have clear in my mind's eye, even as I'm telling you this, is how his face looked. He looked absolutely broken. It was horrible. And my dad was very much like, my dad was the guy that my mum would say, I'm going to tell your dad about. You know, like, he was like a proper.
Yeah.
And so to see him ordinarily, in any ordinary circumstances, my dad would have given me the absolute, I don't know, ass whipping, bollocking, whatever. There's no way he would have allowed me to speak to him like that. But in that moment, he just sat and took it. Do you know what I mean? And he just, and I'll never forget, like, I just went into this rant at him. And then I walked out. And I remember talking about it to my mum. And my mum said, look, you know, I know it was horrible. I don't agree with how you did it. But everything you said was true. Do you know what I mean? And I understand why you feel like, my mum said, I understand why you feel like that. And my dad and I never spoke about it. It's one of the worst conversations I ever had with my father. Do you know what I mean? And we never talked about it again. And then gradually, you know, as I got older and I started doing very, we just gradually became closer and closer, you know, just time moves on and you forget about that sort of, you not forget about it, but it gets to the back of your mind and you start developing a relationship all over again. And he was, you know, he wanted to do everything for my mum. He was completely devoted to making up for everything he'd done in the past. I think he felt like a guilt about how he treated us. And we just got closer and closer. And In terms of us sorting it out, I remember a specific moment on his 60th birthday where a load of his brothers came over from Australia and Canada to celebrate. And in his card, I wrote to him, it's so incredible to have you as a father. Like, I love you so much. And he opened the card and it was in the middle of, like, people, like, my dad's brothers are all getting pissed, you know, as a proper, like, they're like, it's loud when our family get together, right? And he opened the card and he just stopped. And he said to me, I'll never forget this. He said to me, do you really mean that?
Aww.
And I said, yeah, I do. And he was like, so, he almost looked surprised that was my assessment of how he'd been. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was just, I think it felt like, I don't know. And yeah, it was just by the time he passed, I remember like maybe 2 weeks before he died, I was hosting a gig at, in Brighton, and my dad started coming to all my gigs with me. Like, he would turn up, he would sit at the back on his own, he would have a couple of beers, as was his way, and then he would, like, give me a very honest assessment. I remember, like, once doing a gig, it was like my first weekend at Comedia in Brighton, and you know, I'd only just started on the circuit, and I came out of the gig and he said, you were good, but he goes, you weren't as good as the last guy. He said, if you really want to, like, you know, he would give me like honest like assessment of it. But I remember like a couple of weeks before he died, I had a really good gig. He came out, he got smashed. And then afterwards we all went to the pub and he was chatting to all the comedians. And he'd never said this to me before. We were walking to the car. I was giving him a lift home. I hadn't been drinking. And I don't know why I felt like I had to clarify But he just said to me, he was walking along and he goes, can I ask you something? And I said, yeah. And he said, I didn't embarrass you at all tonight, did I? And I said, why did you say that? And he goes, just because I've been drinking and I've been a bit loud. I said, Dad, don't worry about it. You were hilarious. Like, you're great. But he'd never said anything like that to me before. You know, he's always been like, this is how I am. Fucking deal with it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, so it was weird to see him. I don't know. It was weird to see him ask me that question. Do you know what I mean?
God, it sounds like there's so much going on with him. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's so much underneath this. And I can just relate to it because my dad get a very noisy person. And there was so much going on. And it was sometimes hard to get that, to actually get behind what was going on. Yeah. And I can completely, of course you had to have that conversation with your dad. And what incredibleness, like you said, like you grow up with this person who just like, you shout, they shout back, you shout, they shout back. And then for him to just take that is such an act of parenting, isn't it? Of like, yeah, I do deserve this. This is your time, son, where you get to say all the bad things and I take it. That's how much I love you. I'm just going to take it. And that's the parenting I owe you. And so I think it's so amazing that you had that chance and that conversation, because, you know, people don't. Sometimes people never express that. They never get it out. They never say, you know what, this is what you fucking did. And you need to. You need to say that. We definitely, my brother was 19 when my dad died, and they were just getting to that point of like been through a lot of teenage awfulness, and they had the time of like, you were shit, that you do not get to come back to me. And I think my dad was at the point where he was like, oh, I have been quite shit, haven't I? And like, I think some, I don't know, maybe this isn't fair, but some men, it takes a while for, like, almost like the kids need to get old enough to go, no, by the way, what you thought was passable was not.
Because
I know your wife has been saying it all this time, you've been ignoring it, we're here to back her up now. Not good, not great. This is our report card. Yeah. And then they're like, oh shit. But I think amazing that you were able to move through that and have that conversation, and that he got to, I mean, make amends is too simple a term, isn't it? But like you said, to form a new relationship with him, with him as making the changes that he needed to make and become a different person, a different dad. And obviously he obviously felt that deeply, that he had let you down, and that he was able to know, oh, I've made it up. I've kind of repaired as best I can.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, he and I were like very, we had a very, by the time he passed, obviously I was older, we had a very matey relationship. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, and he was like, he was a properly funny bloke. Do you know what I mean? So I really got on with him. Like, I would look forward to spending time with him. It wasn't like I would dread see it. You know, I'd be like, I'm going to go to the pub. You know, I knew that my dad would always be at the pub when he was running it. So I'd be like, I'm just going to pop to the pub and have a pint with dad. Do you know what I mean? That was a thing that I did enjoy doing. And yeah, it felt like seeing him with our kids, it was, you know, he was overseeing family in Canada and was like nervous about missing the birth of our second son. And then when he arrived, my dad cut his trip short and just got the next flight back so that he could like see him as soon as possible. So it's like all of those things were amazing. I feel like my brother and I have a little bit of a different take on it, because I see my dad as a great guy who was a flawed individual, right? And when you first discover that your parents are human. I remember, like, with my mum, it's such a weird moment that I realised that my mum was human, is that my mum was chasing me around my bedroom because I had done something wrong, and she tripped over a toy that she was having to go at me for my room being messy, and she tripped over a toy on the floor and fell over. And I remember thinking, oh my God, mums can fall over. Like, it hadn't occurred to me that was something that happened to them. Do you know what I mean?
They're gods. Gods can trip.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They, oh my God. Like, she tripped. And like, so obviously, like, when you know, it's horrible to say, and I look back at it and I think it must have been very difficult for my mum, but I just didn't believe my mum.
Yeah.
When she was saying that dad was, when she was upset about my dad, you know, sleeping around or whatever, I just thought, you must have this wrong. Dad wouldn't do that. Do you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
And then I remember when I first heard him say that, it was like, oh my God, like he admitted it or he said it in front of me or something like that. And I was like, oh shit. Because he didn't realise that I didn't believe her. Do you know what I mean? He thought I was, you know. But so I see him as like a flawed individual that, but was a great guy at his core. And he was a really great, funny guy. But sometimes I worry when I hear my brother talk about him, because my brother, he more often than not talks about the things that my dad got wrong. Do you know what I mean? Or that my dad, you know, my dad wasn't great with finances. And it turns out when he passed away, when we were trying to look into sorting my mum out with her house and stuff like that, it turned out his financial situation was a house of cards.
Yeah.
And I sort of saw it as like, okay, well, that's classic dad. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Let's try and sort this out. But my brother was a bit more, he was a bit more upset about it, I think. Mm-hmm. I think he saw it as like, I can't be like this guy. Do you know what I mean? Like my, you know, dad was a nightmare. Do you know what I mean? And sort of, I do think he loved him, but his and my takes are very different, I think. You know, and we haven't had that conversation, but I can just tell, you know.
It's so common as well, because I think sometimes, you know, especially if you have kids yourself, you know, like they're so different. Children are so completely different just because they're from the same two people. And therefore your relationship with the parent is completely unique. And, you know, me and my brother have had very different takes on him for a very long time. But we've talked about it, and we almost have different childhoods. Even though he's only 4 years older than me, my dad was completely different to him. Completely different.
Really?
Yeah. And so, like, you know, he was so much harder on my brother, and there was so much more like father-son stuff going on, and so much more like they're similar, and there's a lot of tension there of the similarities, but very both noisy, funny, charming people. And then I have the complete opposite of like, I wasn't even in the room. Like he was like, oh, she's fine. So I have the much more like, so my brother's like, oh, I got all the pressure. And I'm like, I wasn't even that, like, he didn't even.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, and also my other child. So you develop as children this completely different narrative. And then when they die, you're having to deal with a different narrative of like, this person who ignored me died, this person who wouldn't leave me alone died. Like, so it's completely, the grief is completely unique. It's completely based on that one-on-one relationship. And even though there's crossovers of like, well, we know what he was, you know, we both know what it's like to sit around in a pub with him or in a living room with him or a family holiday with him. You can relate to like how awful he was at like talking to people on holiday or something, because you remember that. Or how like how they'd be like, God, this man is loud. And you'd be like, yep, that's him. That's him talking loudly to you, even though you just said hello to him. And you think, is he still here? Yeah, he's still there.
Yeah.
But it's so unique. It's so unique, the relationship. And then the grief is so unique. And I think it's hard sometimes for siblings, because sometimes you look to each other and you think, well, we should have the same experience. We grew up in the same house. But, you know, I'm sure you know from yourself, you're a different parent each time a child comes along. Like you are, or things are different, financial situations are different.
Yeah.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Well, Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So can I ask, what happened when he died? Like, how did he die and where were you at that time? And
well, I was... So my brother and his wife were living with my parents at that time. They're just trying to save up for a house. And I just started... I was still teaching, but I was doing gigs. I was doing comedy in the evenings. And I was in Brighton doing a gig. And as is the way with open mic gigs, it had been cancelled because yeah. Nobody had turned up. And so we just decided to go to the pub instead. And I got a phone call from my brother saying, you need to come home. Claire and I have just got in and Dad's collapsed. He said, we've called an ambulance. And I knew straight away he was dead. Like they said, rush back as soon as you can. But a mate of mine had given me a lift. He said, come on, let's go. We'll get there as quickly as you can. But I was like, I'm going home to see. I don't know how to explain. You know, like I just knew. Yeah. I just thought that is, it just felt like he'd gone. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I was in the car just waiting to find him, do you know what I mean? And so obviously that was a horrible, horrible experience. I walked in, Claire and Dean are very upset. My mum's come back from work. We're all crying, do you know what I mean? And we wait for it to all get sorted out. And, you know, like when you first, you know, I walked in and my dad's body was just sort of lying on the floor. And you are in complete disbelief because empirical evidence suggests that he should be alive.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's the only way you've known him. So like seeing him there, he looked so, I mean, his toenails were out of control, actually. That's one of the things I remember. Like they were absolutely unacceptable. But I just didn't, you know, you just sort of, even though it's a weird contrast, I went there knowing that he'd be dead. And then arrived and was in disbelief that he was. Do you know what I mean?
It's shock as well.
Yeah.
The brain, that you can very logically... I mean, because my dad died of cancer, so you could be like, yes, he's cancer, he's going to die. Yeah, I understand. What? He's dead. Like,
it's just two
different bits of your brain being like, nah, don't think so. Even though another bit's like, he's definitely... You know he's dying, right? Yeah, I know it, but he's not... Nah, he'll come back. Like your brain just wants to protect you. Your brain is, there's a bit of you that's just like, maybe it's not true and we'll just go and have some ice cream. Like maybe that's be fine. So yeah, seeing him, was it a heart attack?
Yeah, it was a heart attack. Yeah. It was a heart attack. He'd had a heart attack maybe 15, 20 years previously. Right. And he'd like sort of tried to, I mean, my dad's lifestyle was almost machine designed for a heart attack. Do you know what I mean? It was insane. Like what he ate, what he drank, he smoked. And he sort of was a bit, you know, he sorted himself out for a bit, but then he was running a pub and like he was drunk every night and smoking and blah, blah, blah. And just, you know, he suddenly passed away. And apparently there was some medication he was supposed to be on that he wasn't taking, but didn't tell any of us, do you know what I mean? And stuff like that. So I'd say to you, it was a surprise, which it was, but his lifestyle was so insane. Do you know what I mean? That it was, to be honest with you, it was just a matter of time. But then obviously when you know that, you then start thinking, why didn't we intervene more? Do you know what I mean? Like, we all knew that. He did everything you're not supposed to do.
Mm.
And so there's part of you that thinks, well, if I really wanted to do something about that, I could have really forced or tried to force him more. But the truth is, my dad was like a really stubborn bloke, do you know what I mean? And then you sort of walk in the line between, am I going to force him to do, you know, probably, yeah, as I'm saying it to you, I'm trying to rationalize how I feel about it, but I think probably we should have been more interventionist than we were, do you know what I mean? But at the same time, you know that if you go and see your dad and have that conversation, it's going to be a horrible experience because he's going to kick back and he'll probably lie to you and say that he's doing it. And so there's all these things that you kind of go, well, what can you do? We can only hope to sort of gently encourage him and see what happens. But then he did die. And so you go, well, obviously that strategy wasn't as effective as we hoped it was going to be. Do you know what I mean?
I do. So, but also, like, you can't, when you're dealing with a tornado person, they do what they want. You know what I mean?
Well,
And I don't know if this is going to make you feel better, but my dad was very, like, lived very wild life and then went completely the other way when we were kids. And so he, you know, drank and smoked, took drugs. And then when we turned up, he went full on, like, marathon, triathlon. So he was incredibly healthy. Like, he was training for an Ironman. and he right. and he got cancer. So I do tell people yeah. that story, because I'm like, you know, like after years, and then part of my mum was like, oh, well, maybe he, you know, he was found healthy for a while. And you're like, yeah, but then he did all the right things. And, yeah. you know, like, and then they even said to us, they were like, oh, yeah, because he was so healthy. So I laugh because it's just hilarious. Because he was so healthy, it spread so quickly through his body, because he was just...
Oh, my God, yeah, really?
Because his metabolism was so fast and he was so healthy. So it was a pancreatic cancer. And it just spread. So within 2 months, it was like everywhere. So you can, you know, I do feel like
yeah,
when people,
I know what you mean.
You know, it's like people do die. That's what happens.
Yeah.
And obviously,
yeah.
obviously, listeners, take care of yourself, you know, be healthy. But there's a certain, human beings have an endpoint. And I think sometimes we look to rationalize, oh, I could have done this, or I could have done that. And really there's like, sometimes bodies just stop working. But yeah, I know what you're saying of like, he lived in the capital L.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I had a similar thing with like a friend of mine, a good friend of mine took his own life a few years ago. And I'd had dinner with him like a few weeks beforehand. And then my initial, and I didn't know whether this was narcissism on my point, but you can't help but think, well, I was with him 2 weeks.
Yeah,
like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can't help starting to think, like, what more could I, you know, could I have done something there? Because I remember, you know, there's so many times when I saw my dad doing stuff. Like, my dad once came back. My dad, his regular thing was to come home absolutely smashed and then eat the worst thing on the planet to sort of deal with how much he'd been drinking. And I remember, like, one day he came back from a night at the pub and he took... He boiled two eggs and then he deep fried them. Right?
Like, how can you make it the worst? Like,
I know.
Boiled eggs on a lot of alcohol, not ideal. It's not toast, yeah. is it? Like, it's not going to like soak it up and then deep
no.
fry them. Fuck
yeah. Yeah, and
then
he added some like chili powder and stuff.
Oh,
like that.
Oh my God.
Like, and then you sort of go, well, I knew that happened.
Yeah.
Surely. You know, if somebody was like designing a pattern of behaviour that might make you think that you need to have a chat with this person,
yeah.
it would be that. Got battered, came home, made chili deep fried boiled eggs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's, you know, when they set out a healthy plan, like, make sure you eat three times a day, lots of fibre.
Yeah.
That's like, you turn the page over and there's that diet.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the anti, like, yeah, yeah, health
he would actually, he's at such a point now where he would actually improve his lifestyle by only having one deep fried boiled egg after a night out. That would actually be a move towards a healthier lifestyle for him.
That would be, everyone would be like, you know what, well done, one deep, well done, very good, Ranga, very good, just the one, that's excellent. Next time, half, and then we can move to maybe no chili.
Yeah, and maybe don't deep fry it at all.
Just
you know, that'd
not,
be the
yeah.
yeah. Yeah, it was. So you do think about things like that, you know. And also his
yeah.
drinking. I mean, he just was
yeah.
regularly drinking loads, but he used to hide it from us. And I remember, like, being very concerned about him taking over a pub. Just sort of felt
yeah,
like that wasn't
yeah,
a good
no,
move.
Stop.
It wasn't a good move for somebody with his drinking habits.
Yeah.
And I remember him telling me all of the... I mean, it's typical, like, somebody that wants to just say what you want to hear so that they can get the thing they want. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
he would just say to me, I'm going to do this, and... I said, what if somebody offers to buy you a drink? He goes, I'm going to decline, or I'm going to have like a thing, a non-alcoholic thing here, and I'm going to say thank you and drink from that. And then sure enough, within a week, he was just battered every single night of his that he worked there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just... And the problem was, he was fun. You'd turn
yeah.
up, he's hilarious. My mates would turn up. He's just amazing. Admittedly, a little bit too flirty with the girls that we had with us, but he would be like... It would be funny. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? And all my friends would go, your dad's a legend. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, oh my God. And they still tell stories about my dad making them some like Sri Lankan food after we'd been on a night out on the piss or whatever, and how cool it was and how funny he was. So in that moment you go, everybody thinks he's a legend. I'm enjoying hanging out with him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you know what I mean? There's so many factors at play that you kind of think about after he's gone.
Yeah, and I think also it's this thing about humans of like they are completely multifaceted beings, and parents are humans. And so and you only get this perspective when someone's died, because then you can stand back and walk away from them on the horizon and be like, wow, who the fuck were you? And someone
yeah.
can be utterly charming and hilarious and also hard to live with and difficult and selfish. Like, all of the things are true, but it's hard sometimes. Like, you're looking for that narrative after death of, like, they were a person, they were a good person, they were a bad dad, they were a good dad. And actually, I've had this with my dad of, like, just constantly being like, he just was my dad. Like, he wasn't good, he wasn't bad. Like, he definitely had lots of room for improvement. Quite a few, things on the, you know, HR list of, like, not sure that's okay. But also lots of, like, my friends loved him. They thought he was so fun, and he was always the one, like, running and throwing kids in the air and, you know, chasing them around being a monster. Like, he was so happy to play. But it was just, the other stuff, the regular, the stable stuff was harder for him. And that's, I think you just sort of have to kind of, I don't know if you ever resolve it. You just constantly go, right, that's what happened.
Well, I think it's sort of what you said, really. You just accept that's what it was. Because, like, at the time, you are trying to go, it's almost like you're Santa deciding whether he's on the nice or naughty list. You sort of go, like, how do I feel about this guy? Do you know what I mean? Like, I definitely loved him, but how do I categorise him so I can move on with my morning? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the truth is, it's like you said, it just is what it is. Yeah. You know, like, you just accept it for what it was. You know, I don't, you know, all this thing about whether somebody's a good person or a bad person, it's really tricky, that. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, if you focus on certain things I do, I'm a good person. You focus on other things, I'm an absolute prick. You know what I mean? So you kind of go, it just is what it is, you know.
I think, you know, death offers more opportunity to think about them, because most other people, your relationship is constant. So they do something awful, but then the next week they do something great and you're like, oh, they are all right. Oh, they are okay. And you know, you have these reminders of the good stuff. And it's really hard to be balanced. And I think that is also a part of grief. The grief process is, you know, as the years go by, and as you said, like, the more you, but you know, see yourself as a parent or see other things or things that you don't want to be like them, and kind of assessing them, really. I don't think you ever stop assessing them. And I've had moments where I've been, furious with him. Just like, what an absolute prick. Like, I can't believe he did that. And then I got older and gone, their kids are annoying. I can see why he didn't want to be around us all the time.
They are annoying.
How do you feel you've, this isn't the right word, like, not dealt with your grief, but, you know, did you have counselling, or did you just kind of, you just had your second son, so were you just like, I'm in full on small children, I'll just get on with it, think about it later?
Well, it was slightly tricky, to be honest with you. I mean, my dad's passing away caused massive problems with me and my brother, really. So basically, my dad passed away 3 days before I left my teaching job. So my plan was to, it's terrible timing by him, but my plan was to leave teaching. I'd hand in my resignation and then I was going to go full time as a comedian. And then 3 days before my last day, he passed away.
Jesus.
And then we had this situation where we discovered the finances were a house of cards. We weren't sure what was going to happen with my mum's house, you know, the house that they shared. And we didn't know, you know, you had to sort out all this, like, probate and all this kind of stuff and all this shit. But at the same time, I'd just been paid for the last time as a teacher and wasn't really making any money from comedy and had just had my second child, right?
Gosh.
It was like a really high-pressured situation. And my brother felt like I wasn't doing enough to help out with the sorting out my mum and the aftermath of my dad's passing away. And I felt like I was operating at full tilt. But, you know, looking back, now I think to myself, well, I can see it from his point of view, totally.
Yeah.
But at the time, because I was so stressed out, I was just like, fuck you, man. You know, I'm struggling here. I remember having a row with him on the phone that brought the foyer of the Hoare Theatre in Crawley, just as they're walking into Panto, to a stop. As I sort of shouted, I'm never going to forget how you've treated me. You know, and he said, I'm never going to forget how you treated me. And then, like, the argument continued. It was in front of, like, our kids. It's in front of Lisa's mum. And then they went into the theatre, and I spent the first half sort of continuing the argument, and then I went in after the interval. But it was Dick Whittington. I still followed the storyline. But yeah, it was like... And that, if I'm being honest, that created a rift between my brother and I that took us months to sort out, really. Yeah. And every now and again, as close as I am to my brother, I don't know how to explain it. It's like a scar. Do you know what I mean? So if I now... If one of us perceives the other one to not be doing the brotherly thing, we'll fall back to that dynamic very easily. Do you know what I mean? So even though it's okay, it's brought this thing into our relationship where, you know, it could be something as simple as I don't text him back quick enough about something. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Or something like that. And that, I don't think that would have been the case before, but it just ripped open this whole thing. And yeah, I had a weird, you know, with regards to actual sort of explicitly, you know, grief. I remember, like, we had a joke about it. My brother, it was quite a dark joke, but my brother, the day after my dad passed away, did an impression of me crying when I discovered dad was dead. And he said, I had no idea you made that noise.
I love it. That is, as only siblings can be so shitty to each other. It's exactly what me and my brother like. Just like, what an unnecessary observation, but you can't help but make it because it's your sibling. You're like, what are you doing? Yeah. That's so weird. Yeah. You're so weird.
And then, like, I didn't, not because of my brother taking the piss out of me, but I didn't really cry after that until...
Are you sure he didn't damage you and you were like, pack this up.
I had a weird... I mean, a couple of weird things. My auntie, my dad's sister, was really expressively teary at the funeral.
Yeah.
And I didn't cry at all during the funeral. And I watched some of my... You know, my friends were crying and blah, blah.
It's so
common. They must have
thought
I was like a fucking heartless bastard. But
no, the closer you are, the harder it is to emote. And it's so common that people go to friends of friends' funerals or they go to support someone and they are sobbing. And the people in the next, in the epicenter are like, we're not crying because you're in shock. To be honest, you're in shock.
Yeah.
So that's why you can't stand there and be like, oh no, they're gone. Because you're like, no, they're not. They're probably fine. They're probably coming home. I don't know why everyone's crying. But you can't say that out loud because people will be like, oh, they're not dealing with it. But you're like, we know he's dead. He's not dead. He can't be dead. Like, it's not. Can't be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, of course.
But then what would happen is over the course of the next however long, little things would trigger me. So, for example, I had an accident. I had a car accident on the way back from a gig. And the police came and picked me up and dropped me off at Watford Gap Services.
Oh, God.
And I had to phone my parents and ask them to come and get me from Watford Gap at like 3 a.m. And then after my dad passed away, I was driving to a gig and I went past Watford Gap Services and I just started crying.
Oh.
Like, it was just because it reminded me of that thing. And then another time I was... I was doing a tour show and I came out of the show and there's this Sri Lankan family that had come to watch the show and the dad of the family said, we really enjoyed the show, and he just sounded exactly like exactly like my dad. And so I had to, obviously it's not his fault that he sounds like my dad, but I had to bring the conversation to as swift an end as I possibly could because I was talking to them and feeling myself getting choked up. Do you know what I mean? It was... So, and that just continued happening. I kept getting caught by surprise. And like, my dad was a massive Arsenal fan, as am I. You know, he was like proper militant Arsenal fan. And occasionally, even months after he passed away, something would happen with Arsenal and I'd pull my phone out to text him because that's what I always did. You know, we'd always be chatting about who they're going to buy, what do you think of that result, blah, blah, blah. And I would have that. I would just go, instinctively, I wonder what that, and then I'd just like, fuck, look, what am I doing? Do you know what I mean? So... But then what happens is that happens less and less frequently. And then what happens is you start feeling guilty about how infrequently that's happening. Do you know what I mean? As it goes on. And it's a different thing to deal with because you kind of feel like my dad's gone and things will never be the same. And then you have a period of life where things, obviously he's not here, but things are, you're happy, laughing, you're having a great time, things are going well, you're okay. And then occasionally you catch yourself going, shit, I haven't thought about him enough or whatever.
But I think we have such a narrative of what grief should look like. And again, I wrote a whole chapter about that in the book, because I was like, I have spoken to so many people who feel bad because they're like not grieving in the way they think they're supposed to. And when you examine it, you're like, there's absolutely no fucking evidence that you should like permanently cry, get to a year and a half, click, now you're fine.
Laughter now
acceptable. And it's a bit like we're describing, you know, your dad, like he was neither this nor this. He was all of these things at the same time. And it's the same with grief. It's like you can be devastated, crying your eyes out, and then you're laughing because your brother's under depression, and then you'll feel guilty. And it's like grief is like every single emotion at the same time, like screaming at you at the same time. And I always think, like, I always say to people, like, when you're in that bit of like the sobbing, like making the weird noises, you will always reach a point where you can't. You'll need the loo. Do you know what I mean? Like something in your body goes, we can't keep this up, actually. Your throat hurts, and actually this position's very uncomfortable. Why are you on the floor? And you're like, yeah, my feet are cold, aren't they? Like you're just, it's impossible to stay constantly grieving. And there's this this new theory of grief, which again, like I talk about because I was obsessed with it, called dual process model. And it literally is... two grief psychotherapists, Strober and Schutt, who have said the way that humans grieve is they oscillate between two states. So you're the big snotty crying, and then they're like literally watching telly, not thinking about it. And if you don't oscillate, you can't process it. So you have to keep switching between one and the other. So you have the crying, and then you're watching Netflix and it's 3 a.m. and you're like, oh, I haven't thought of them all day. Like, what? Oh.
Yeah.
And actually, when you're not thinking about them, your body is kind of processing all the sadness that you've had. And I just feel like we just, as humans, we don't know a lot of this stuff because we're not grief psychotherapists. And I only know that from doing this show. And when I read it, I was like, oh, no one needs to feel bad. Like, that's all we're all doing. It's like...
Yeah, that describes my experience so much. But you feel bad about it.
Yeah, and it is actually, they've said, like, that's how humans do it, and that's the healthiest way to do it. If you are in one state too much, that's unhealthy. Like, if you're constantly crying or you never, ever speak about them, like, the extremes of that is like, that doesn't sound great. I've seen that, like, every single guest has had that experience. I've had experience. People who look like them, who just, your heart stops because you're like, oh my God, oh my God. And especially like you said, I guess like that sound, that Sri Lankan accent, like it's like, you're not hearing that every day. And it triggers you, you have this moment. And then of course you have to pass to a different state of like, well, now I have to do a gig and now I have to go somewhere else. And I think it's just about, the acceptance, the way we accept them as parents of flawed individuals, if we can accept ourselves as a flawed individual, that grief is a bit messy and weird and odd, and you don't always do it in the way that you think you're going to. But however you do it is okay.
Yeah, yeah. You've made me feel a lot better about that.
Good.
You genuinely have.
Well, that's how
I feel guilty about it.
Yeah, Ramesh, when I read it, I was like, I mean, maybe in 10 years' time, they'll be like, actually, it's bullshit, you should be crying. But
you're a horrible, horrible prick.
But when I read it, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I've had 20 plus years of thinking, I don't think about him enough, or, you know, like, the times I've, like, move on quickly, and you're like, oh, that's just literally how your brain, human brains work. You can't constantly weep. It's, you know, there aren't enough tears. And I think because at the beginning you do have so much sadness, when that changes, you know, like in the first 6 months where you are just like in shock and crying and you don't know what's going on, and when you sort of get your feet back on the ground, you think, oh, I should be back there, like that's what grief is, the kind of wailing crying. But actually that's just the first mad 6 months where you don't know what the fuck's happened to you. That's not, again, it's a bit like having a kid, isn't it? Like the first 6 months of having a baby, or especially your first child, is mental. But that's not what parenting is. That's not like the full load of it.
Yeah.
It's just the first like, oh my God, what have I done? What's happening?
Why didn't anyone say this is going to be this difficult? Does everyone go through this?
And then you come through it and you realise, okay, like your life adapts. And that's the same with grief. Like the first 6 months are like, what the fuck? And then you start adapting to it and living with it. But I think sometimes we think living with it is denying it or forgetting them. But actually, that is living with it. It's like remembering them, having the photo up, talking about them, occasionally, but also sometimes not bringing them up, or things passing inside.
Occasionally, you want to talk about him, but you end up talking about apartheid because how your son's interpreted a photo. That's all part of the grieving process.
It's all part of the grieving process. And what's hard that he said Nelson Mandela is like, you can't, you want to make sure they do know who Nelson Mandela, like that's important, but you can't be like, no, don't worry about him, he's not important, your granddad, like.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want him to dismiss him, but all equally, you don't want him saying Nelson Mandela's my granddad at school, do you know what I mean?
When they do cover it in history and he's like, fucking hell, that's my granddad. Like, you're related to Nelson Mandela? Yeah, my dad doesn't like talking about it, but obviously that's what, but yeah.
He says he was a pisshead. Do you know that?
He ran a pub, miss. He did. Yeah. In Crawley. Oh, Ramesh, I could talk to you forever. Thank you so much. What an amazing and interesting character Ranga sounds like. I feel like we got the sense of him. So thank you.
Yeah.
For...
Well, it's very helpful to me. So thank you for having me on.
Oh, no. Bless you. Thank you so much. Thank you. If you'd like any information about Ramesh, you can head to his website, Ramesh Ranganathan. Ramesh is R-O-M-E-S-H. Ranganathan is R-A-N-G-A-N-A-T-H-A-N. So head to RameshRanganathan.co.uk and you can find all the information where he's touring, his podcasts. He has a podcast with comedian Tom Davis called The Wolf, which is very, very funny. And yeah, you can find out all about the brilliant things that he's doing and the various gigs he's doing. And he is so, so funny and so worth seeing live. If you enjoyed that, you will very much enjoy his new Netflix special as well, The Cynic, which is out, I think is already out. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was recorded remotely. It was edited by Kate Holland. The music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back after Christmas holiday times, winter festival times. We'll be back in January with a few more episodes and the book will be coming out. So I'll obviously be banging on about that then. Have a very peaceful Christmas and New Year times, and I hope that wherever you are, it's as okay as it can be. And remember, griefsters, you are not alone. Thank you.
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way. Because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.